It's Tuesday, June 12th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Aloha, everyone. I got a great show for you tonight. I'm doing a little bit of an experiment as well because I'm coming to you live at mylifeonline.tv. But you won't know that because you're listening to this later. But we'll talk a little bit about that more in a minute. Meanwhile, strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast. My name is Todd Cochran, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Ford Island here in Honolulu, Hawaii. How's everyone? Are you have a great day back to work? Is everyone fully enthralled in the work week? Well, I had a very, very busy day myself, and I know most of you probably did as well. But I got a great show for you lined up tonight, and I want to thank, of course, all of our long-term subscribers of the show. Hey, thanks for being part of the Ohana, of course, and thanks for staying subscribed. For those of you that are checking out the show for the very first time, hey, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there, and make sure you get subscribed to our newsletter. It's available via the third link of the website, and that will get you the show notes delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show. So we hope you get signed up for that. Well, I tell you, a lot of things going on here, and I got to playing around this weekend, had a little bit of extra time, believe it or not. And, you know, I talked about registering that domain, mylifeonline.tv. Well, I also have ourlifeonline.tv. And I was telling Choco, I said, honey, what do you think about wiring the house up with cameras? And she's like, you know, you're going to have to make sure we get paid a lot of money for me to allow someone to watch us 24/7. So I guess the question is, the initial question of the night for the entire audience out there is, how much would it take for you and your family to be recorded live 24/7, non-cut, except for, you know, not allowing bathrooms to be recorded and that kind of stuff? But how many of you would, how much would it take? That's the number I got to come up with. And I'm sure it's a pretty big number. The question is trying to find someone crazy enough to record a boring family like this. But anyway, it's kind of a fun experiment. We shall see what kind of response we get from those of you that, you know, throw me a number out there. I'd love to hear the dollar amount. But tonight what I'm doing is I'm using Ustream.tv to actually do the outgoing video stream, and then I have an IRC chat up, so we'll see how many people drop in. Of course, you know, being here in Honolulu, it's a little bit of a disadvantage because it's 8:30 at night here. I'm doing the recording, and that means it's 2:30 in the morning on the East Coast. Most of you are tucked away in your bed sleeping, so I doubt you're going to be watching me record this show when you can get it on tape delay. But hopefully we'll drag some of the West Coast night owls in and maybe some of the folks here in Hawaii. But I've been thinking about doing something on a regular basis, kind of doing like a, you know, kind of like an Art Bell coast-to-coast type show from time to time, where it would be a late-night, middle-of-the-night type of show. It would be a lot of fun. Now, see, for me, it would be good because I could start recording here at 6 in the afternoon and go to midnight, and it would be a you know, lower 48, really late show, but I would still be able to get my beauty rest. Should be a lot of fun. We'll see what happens with that concept. But this show is going to continue to go on, of course, and enough talk on that. But I'm just having a little fun here with this new domain and trying this little thing online. All right, got a bunch of stuff cooking here. Of course, we are rapidly approaching the July 1 start date of the Podcast Awards over at podcastawards.com. And I'm still looking for a few more sponsors over there. Hopefully, we'll get a few to kick in maybe in and about the time that it's starting. We've got enough sponsors to push us the way through. Haven't got as quite as many as we want, but it'll be what it will be. Also, I've got, you know, how many of you are sick of the Apple news? It's just like for the last couple of days, all we've been hearing is Apple, 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 Apple. Of course, the WWDC is going on and some announcements today. My Steve Jobs will be talking a little bit about that during the show. And going to be talking about Safari. So that ought to be kind of interesting because I've learned some stuff today about Safari that I wasn't aware of before. Also, I've had some very, I think, some important articles I need you to focus in on the website. I wrote up an article today about Time Warner and the Roadrunner service now doing packet shaping. And I think all of you that are on Time Warner and you are power users like I am, you need to be really, really concerned because what they're going to do here is they're going to, essentially, those of us that are using too much bandwidth, they're going to throttle us. They're going to throttle our bandwidth down. And that could really affect people that are on voice IP. You know, all kinds of services could be affected here. So we will see what they do and how many are actually affected. Space Shuttle Atlantis, of course, launched, and they've actually docked at the International Space Station. I think they've done their first spacewalk. They're actually going to extend the mission a couple of days, I hear, because of that space blanket that, or that heat-resistant blanket or whatever it is that needs to be space blanket. Anyway, whatever it is, that blanket that's not supposed to be any danger, but they are worried about it being exposed, which would cause major repair work need to be done once the shuttle's on the ground. But so I guess they're going to do that repair. So we'll see what happens over the next couple. This will be the true first test on them doing some sort of repair like this. As always, I got myself a trusty glass of iced tea here. Okay, I think I've got everything in my little note list here that I want to talk about. There's a couple other things I'm going to talk about here that I found this weekend. But before I do that, I want to make sure that we take care of a little business here. If you want to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has what you need. .com names as low as $1.99, plus world-class hosting, fast and easy website builders, and much, much more. Plus, enter the code Todd, T-O-D-D, when you check out and save an additional 10% on your order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Of course, you can use a couple more promo codes. Geek5 will save you 15% off your orders of $20 or more. You can use Pod58 when you're going over there and checking out hosting accounts. So make sure you check out GoDaddy.com, and thanks for GoDaddy for being a sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. Now, I do have actually in the office tonight, and I don't know if she's going to say anything or not because she's on MySpace. My daughter Natalie is in from Florida, and she's you're jet lagging, aren't you? What time it's late? So it's 2:36 in Florida. And I tell you what, she stepped off the airplane and I met her at the baggage claim. Boy, they grow up fast. They really, really do. And, you know, I remember a very little girl. And then as these stages go through and I have a grown-up woman sitting across the table from me here. So it's pretty amazing how fast they grow up. So it's going to be fun to have her here with us for about a month. So she's going to be visiting, and she's got some friends she's messaging tonight. Is that what you're doing? Are you sending all of them a 411 on what's going on? So she's excited about hooking up with her friends. She lived here before. So, and my daughter Anna is watching over her shoulder here. School's out, so you know they're up a little bit late. All right, what else we got going on? Hey, make sure that as you're looking for new podcasts that you get over to blueberry.com at blubrry.com. And, of course, check out techpodcast.com for all the fine podcasts that are over there. And as always, we want to thank GoToMeeting for being our continued sponsor. And I've had great reviews coming back from the vendors on those programs, so we're real happy about that. But we're going to be getting ready to do another, boy, I'm coughing on you, I'm sorry, another roundtable here in the next, probably before the end of the month. And, of course, that's going to be sponsored by GoToMeeting. And these days, whether you're in business or simply wanted to share something with friends or family, email and voicemail sometimes just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, a web conferencing solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business, associates, family, and friends. The ability to host online meetings is an absolute must for today. With GoToMeeting.com, it's just like you're all in the same room. Unlimited meetings for one flat rate means you can meet as often as you want for as long as you need. Try it yourself for free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. Try GoToMeeting free today. All right, I got a lot of stuff on the agenda for you, and I got an instant message from, I don't know if he's a listener or a reader of the website at geeknewscentral.com, but he linked me to a video of Drobo, the world's first storage robot. I'm telling you, you got to go over and check this out. Really, really cool. It's, you know, there's been a lot of companies that have created USB storage devices. You know, you put a single drive in it, connects to a computer via USB cable, and it's, you know, it's an external drive. But what this is this is a four-drive unit that lets you to hot plug and hot swap drives in and out. If a drive goes bad, you can pull it without even shutting the unit down, put in a new drive. It's got RAID compliance. It is a thing of absolute beauty. A little pricey, $499, but once you see the demo, you're going to agree with me. Very, very cool. Now, I expect big things from this company. If they're going to be doing, you know, essentially putting out a drive that, or a unit where you could put 4 1-terabyte drives in it, that is going to be, you know, that's some amazing storage, RAID capability for the average user that, you know, that really this hasn't been available before at that price range. So make sure you check out Drobo.com. There's a link on the website for the actual device. I'd love to get my hands on one of these and put it through its paces. Don't know if I, you know, at this point, as many external hard drives as I've got around here, I don't know if I can justify the cost of the unit, but boy. If you're doing development work, you're doing a lot of video editing, like I'm actually starting to do a lot now, it just might be something. Boy, $4.99. I've been saving my dollars up for the for a Windows Home server. You know, I've been hoping that's going to be what my big summer purchase is, and that would be a nice unit to have. I'd rather have that than the Drobo, but boy, it sure is tempting, that's for sure. Another thing is I was having some issues. I've got, when I record the podcast, I do it on a Windows box. It's a, you know, it's a pretty good PC. I've got a good sound card in it, and, you know, it's spec'd out to do audio, but it really is not, it doesn't do well doing video. And when we do our online events, I've been capturing with Camtasia. I've been actually doing screen capture with Camtasia within Windows, and it just takes forever. I mean, forever to render. I can, you know, essentially a 1 hour video that I'm recording on my screen can take as much as 12 hours to render. And part of it is because it, you know, the machine doesn't have a super, it doesn't have a super duper video card in it. So I was pricing today some of the units that are on the PC side. And by the time I got done specking out the machine, I thought, goodness gracious, you know, if I buy a card it's actually going to do video rendering good, it, you know, and buy a professional video rendering card, which, believe it or not, is like $2,000. It's yes, I'm having a heart attack. it's pricey. It really, really is. So I don't know. I gotta look around for some alternatives here. And, you know, for those of you that are Mac users out there, maybe you can help me out and let me know what, you know, what is the Camtasia equivalent on the Mac side? You know, if I'm going to invest that kind of money in something that's going to render video quicker, I'm not going to buy another Windows machine. I'll probably buy a Mac Pro, you know, that quad box, because by the time I got done specking the machine out that would do all this, it was like $3,700. I said, forget it. You know, that's just too much money. So, you know, for an extra, you know, I can buy that quad with all the bells and whistles for a little bit more money than that. and you know, and continue to add to, you know, what I've been using here to do my regular video stuff as well. So let me know, what are you guys using to, what is the Camtasia equivalent within the Mac world for doing screen capture stuff? That's essentially what we're doing on the PC side. Maybe there isn't a Camtasia equivalent with all the bells and whistles and be able to export into all the different, well, I'm sure any Mac will go into a .mov file, then we can export into whatever we want. But anyway, drop me a line if you have some suggestions there. You know, really, software pricing is not an issue. If I have to spend some money for some software, I will. I think that may be the better solution than actually going on the side of buying another Windows box with that high-end graphics card. Of course, now, you know, if I buy that quad, you know, how many of you, Paul, are you listening? Did you buy a high-end graphics card for your Mac Pro, for your quad? Are you using, what kind of a video card are you using that? I guess that's the question to ask right now. Are you having to spend that kind of money as well? Okay, what else have I got here for you? I think that's all I've got on my just kind of basic notes. I got a whole bunch of stuff here in the actual show lineup for you tonight. And let me get over here to my first article. Parallels 3.0 is out. And over on Doug Kay's weblog, he's given Parallels 3.0 two thumbs up. And he says he's upgraded it and he loves it. You know, I was impressed with Parallels 2.0. I have that loaded on my MacBook Pro. And he's saying in here he can run OS 10, XP, and Vista all at once very smoothly. He says, I have complete drag and drop and clipboard transparency across all operating systems. He says, I can transparently open files in any environment from any other. He says, I can run CPU intensive and some hardware dependent applications like SoundForge. He says, I get audio input from FireWire devices like Motu interface, but I can send audio output from Windows through OS 10 audio systems. Now, he has a pretty high-end machine. He's got, he's got two dual-core CPUs, 4 gigs of RAM, and a 1.25 terabytes on three drives. So that's definitely a desktop version. Yeah, Parallels desktop for Mac. So, yeah, Doug loves it. I know a lot of people are giving rave reviews on it. It's available. I don't know what the actual upgrade price is. I have not looked at that yet, but I'll definitely have to get over there and see what they're charging for an upgrade. But lots of accolades on Parallels. You know, my lovely wife and I went house hunting. We're back in the house hunting mode here in Honolulu again this weekend. And it was quite frustrating. It really, really was. Everything we see that we like is out of our price range, and everything that's in our price range I wouldn't move my dog into. So, you know, it's kind of one of those situations. But I found an interesting link, and I just had to share this with you. I know it's non-geeky, but there's a deal going on in Detroit right now that if you are willing to buy a loft, they're going to give you a free Land Rover 2-year lease. It says free Land Rover for 2 years, for a 2-year lease, or free mortgage payments for 1 year on the purchase of a loft in Detroit. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? If housing prices are that bad, wow, what a deal! So if you are in the Michigan area and you are looking for a place, you can get yourself a free Land Rover for 2 years. By buying a loft. Now, I don't know what, you know, lofts are generally not that big, but this is right in downtown Detroit. So I guess their land and housing economies in the dumps. I wish we'd have a little of that trickle down effect here in Honolulu and have the prices go down here as well. Okay, there's a great report over on space.com talking about the number of exoplanets being found is just increasing at an amazing rate. So many, in fact, that many of them are not even being announced. They've seen, I call them exoplanets. I should have called them extrasolar planets. I guess that's what they're actually referred to as. But they say the total now is over 200. And they're saying this is the tip of the iceberg. They're finding these things on a regular basis using new techniques that are out there. So it's very, very cool what they're finding. And it's the way they're finding them is it's part of the TRES, T-R-E-S-3, and this is where I found that reference word, the Transatlantic Exoplanet Survey. And they're looking for transiting planets or those that pass directly in front of their home star with in respect to Earth. They can detect that movement. So very interesting that they found is up to 200 so far, different sizes, different mass, different temperature, different, you know, spacings away from their home stars. Some are too hot, some aren't. And it kind of, there was, I saw a New York Times article, I'm not going to reference it in the show tonight, but they kind of call it like the Goldilocks of planets, a little bit too big, a little bit too hot, a little bit too cold, and some that are just right. So it's kind of interesting, the analogy that they're using there. But, you know, you know, what difference does it make? We can't get to them anyway. But it is interesting that they're starting to increase the number of planets that they're finding outside of our solar system. Great article over on blogstorm.co.uk. It talks about advanced uses of Google Analytics and talks about their new interface. If you haven't used Google Analytics before, you know, and it's a pretty pretty powerful statistics and measuring system. It's able to tell you, you know, how many visitors you have, the traffic sources, the type of in-click, where they're, you know, where the traffic's being going to into your website, where they're leaving from. They even give you a little bit of some graphical stuff that talks about where people are actually clicking on your page. So if you haven't been using Google Analytics, I've been using it for a while. I use that and StatCounter. I kind of use StatCounter to do my what I kind of call my quick and dirty look of what where the stats are at. But when I want to dig in deep into the interface, I look at the Google Analytics. So, you know, if you're doing actual AdSense banners on your site as well, you can actually track exit clicks on those as well. And you can even get information on RSS feed subscribers now with the new Google Analytics as well. So check it out and check out this review. It's a great review. He's got a great, you know, he's going over this page by page on the different different options. It's within the advanced features of Google Analytics. Something came to my attention today that I got to thinking about, maybe not in the traditional sense of way this article has been written, but it came from TechCrunch, and the article says, Technorati, when will the traffic party end? And I got to thinking about it, and especially what Michael Arrington has to say in here. The traffic on Technorati has continued to climb at an amazing rate. He says the page views in March was up 3.5 million from 2 months prior, a total with page views up a total of 141% over the previous 3 months. Now that, my friends, is some amazing, amazing growth rate. So where are they getting the traffic? What's driving it there? Well, many bloggers today, when they put a tag on their website, they tag it such a way that it actually links back to Technorati. Now, on my website, if you go to geeknewscentral.com and you click on a tag, the tag stays internal to Geek News Central. It doesn't go anywhere else. It'll load all the articles that have been tagged the same way from newest to oldest. And I think I limit the number of responses. You get like 20 to a page or something. So when Google comes in and does a crawl of my website and they get to my tag link, it links internally. It doesn't go anywhere else. It doesn't link out to Technorati. So what I have done here is internally I've made sure that Google stays internal. But for those of you that have blogs that have tags on them that are tagging out to Technorati, what you have essentially have done is you're giving Technorati thousands and thousands of outbound links to their website, which is essentially what's happening is Google's building up a good amount of search data. So when they search on your tag, well, guess who comes up first instead of your website? Oh, did the headlight just come on? I hope it did. So the question I have, and you know, I understand why some people are doing this. Do you really want to Which way do you think this should go? Should you be tagging internally so that your tags load pages internally to you? Or do you want people to go to Technorati? I think personally, I'd use Technorati to do searches, but Technorati's already out there doing spidering of websites. They're not just, you know, getting inbound links from people. They're actually going out there and actively updating different sites from their own engine. So I think I'm just going to let Technorati continue to come in and spider my site on its own. And at the same, and I think I ping them anyway. I ping them when the site updates. I think they're in my ping results or ping stack. So I think what I'm going to do is make sure that my internal tags stay internal and then let them just go ahead. Because, you know, they're picking stuff up. I'll go to Technorati and I'll type in a term and they, you know, I'm in the stack for the specific thing that I've got tagged on my website. So something to think about for sure. And Michael's thinking that this is what's driving the extreme amount of traffic over to Technorati. And I guess this is the risk that everyone has by placing essentially their metadata that's internal to the article that they've written, having that metadata linked to an external site. I hope everyone's following my line of thinking here. But, you know, you don't get 141% growth over 3 months just by, you know, buying some AdSense ads or just, you know, normal traffic increases. They, you know, they've been around a long time. So what do you think? How many of you actually on your blogs have tags that are pointed towards Technorati with that hyperlink going straight to them? I bet you a lot of you are, especially those of you on WordPress. Because I see most of the WordPress plugins are set up that way. All right, I know we've heard all about all the Apple news we can handle so far, for the day at least. I know I can because of all the stuff coming out of WWDC. But Apple.com has updated their website. They got a nice, fresh look. And they're definitely in the selling of hardware. And the upgrade of to Leopard is going to cost you $129, which will be a pretty cheap upgrade, if you ask me. But they've done a nice job on their website update. I haven't been over there and seen what they've done. Go ahead and do that. All right, I found a article over on tlbox.com, and this is going to appeal to those of you that are system administrators. We always talk about, you know, top 10 list or top 50 list, but what about a top 282 list? TLBox.com has a listing of 282 of the most popular system administrative tools that are out there, and they have them ranked by specific functions: database, email, hard disk, internet, Linux, Macintosh, network, scripts, virus, Windows. So I'm going to back up here and go up to database. I guess they do have some Windows stuff in here. I thought this was just for Linux folks. It's not. So anyway, if I go up the database, number one is PHP Admin. Number two is Toad. Number three is CACTI. Number four is Big Admin. Number five is Database Forum. So these are all tools that system administrators are using. A pretty good list. It really, really is. And then you can click in a little deeper, and it'll actually list you all of the database tools that people are using. And if there's one that's missing from the list, you can actually add a tool to it. Looks like a great resource for those of you that are definitely, you know, administrating systems or looking to have some more tools to be able to more easily, you know, do that job in itself. Okay, on a more lighter note, I don't know how many of you watched the last episodes of Sopranos. But boy, there's just been an amazing amount of news on the net talking about how the fans of The Sopranos were upset. And I guess they were so upset and they caused so much traffic going to the HBO website that the HBO website crashed. Now, I don't know if it was a direct result of just a lot of people that purposely tried to make it crash or if it just got slammed with people that were upset about the finale. I didn't watch it. I don't know what happened, but I know there's a lot of mad people. How many of you watched it? What made you so mad? You know, go ahead, send me a spoiler. I'd love to. And of course, tonight, if you have comments on anything in the show, make sure you send it to geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com, or call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. All right, with Steve Jobs' keynote today at the WWDC, he announced that Apple Safari has now been released to operate on Windows. So, you know, I've never been a big fan of Safari as it is, you know, and I'll be real frank here. I know some of you probably are big Safari fans and you use it a lot, but, you know, when my 9-year-old is using the Mac Mini and he says, "Dad, I don't like this browser. Is there any other browsers out there that are available?" And I load Firefox on the Mini for him. And then he comes back and says, "Oh, that's much, much better." Something tells me that there's some fundamental things wrong with Safari. He didn't like it. I don't like it. I'm sure some of you do like it. But now that they've made it available for Windows, the goal is for Safari to gain some market share. Now, I've seen a whole bunch of reporting on this today. There must have been 5,000 people that reported on Safari being made available for Windows. And people running right out and doing some reviews. And I think the telltale signs of some issues were right off the bat. And, of course, who would expect everything to be 100% from day one? But there was two bugs that were found right off the bat. That one would have caused a denial of service, could have been, you know, exploited to have allowed for a denial of service attack on a Windows machine. And separately, there was a URL protocol handler command injection vulnerability that was found that allowed remote command execution. So, you know, not good. You don't want your browser being able to execute commands. So, you know, Apple's going to have to get busy and get those patched up and fixed. There's another article, I'm going to wait till I get to it, that talks about the clarity of the actual font, the ClearType font within the actual Safari browser comparing to Internet Explorer. So I'll talk about that when we get to it here in a little bit. I probably should have had it stacked together, but I did not. All right, next article up is how, it's kind of a surprising one actually. There was a blogger who went to a NCAA baseball game, and he was actually live blogging during the game, and the NCAA officials, during the fifth inning of the game, I guess this was between the University of Louisville and Oklahoma State, told the blogger that it was against NCAA's policies to allow that person to live blog. I guess he actually had press credentials, so they actually pulled this guy's press card and asked him to leave the stadium. Now, imagine if you are a reporter or a television personality or even a radio personality, and you're there and you're doing live updates on the baseball game. Maybe you're there for an affiliate station or something and you do a periodic update, or if you're there doing your article, you're writing your article for your newspaper or for an online periodical, or if you're a TV guy, you know, they're not going to ask those guys to leave. But this guy was blogging, and he was actually a staff blogger for the Courier Journal, which was I guess that's a newspaper down there locally. But they said, no, you can't live blog, pulled his press card and sent him packing. This is pretty amazing, really, if you think about it here. You know, you guys got a press card, freedom of the press, right? But not according to the NCAA. If you're there and you live blog it, you get prepared to be sent packing. I've not heard a lot of commentary on this. We'll see what happens there. But hopefully some bloggers will stand up and get outraged over this. All right, now kind of the Dumb and Dumber article of the day. And this comes from Engadget. And it's got a picture of this guy that's obviously in a tattoo parlor. And then here's the title of the article. What kind of man gets a Zune tattoo? That's correct. He has the a Zune logo tattooed on his forearm. You know, he's got this look. You wait to see the show notes. Because he's got this look on his face like, I can't believe I just got a Zune logo tattooed on my arm. And it's like red and yellow. It's just, of all tattoos to pick, why would you get the Zune logo on your forearm? Now, he better be careful because Microsoft may come after him for copyright infringement. You know, I'm hoping he had been binge drinking and wakes up the next day and said, what is this my geek buddy had put on my arm? He's got that look like, I can't believe I just did this. It's just too funny. Link will be up in the show notes, so make sure you check it out at geeknewscentral.com. All right, great article about a new Windows tablet hybrid that serves two dual purposes. You can have it hooked up to your laptop and just, you know, it works just like a regular laptop LCD screen. And then you get done using the laptop and you can actually detach it from the laptop and move it onto a, looks like it like a regular TV stand. It snaps in, it's got a set of speakers, and it goes from being a computer to an actual TV. And you can actually, it's two separate pieces. You've got the laptop piece that travels as a laptop, and then you've got the standard, you know, tabletop type of screen stand. Pretty cool dual use. It really, really is. Very smart. I don't know what the price on this is. Don't know if I'd buy one myself, but, you know, if you're trying to save a little money, this may be the way to do it. And the display is only 14 inches, though, so... And there's no no reporting on the actual resolution of the display, but kind of a nice dual-use little product here. And it doesn't say who makes it either. And, oh, this is actually a tablet. The actual screen is a tablet hybrid, so that kind of makes sense. I've seen some of these tablet screens that detach already, so they're just taking it to the next level here. All right, article over on... Boy, don't you hate those pop-up ads? I got one here. Article over on Microsoft Watch. This was making the rounds today, too. Google complaint targets Vista Search. And apparently, and I did not know this, but back in 2001, when Microsoft did their consent decree with U.S. Justice Departments, there was a process that was set up so that when a third party filed a complaint against Microsoft, that third party's name was kind of kept quiet. It was in a kind of like a sealed document. And what would happen would be, it was that the litigation process would continue quietly, and by some sort of a, I don't know if it was a normal procedure where it would actually go to a court in a normal way, or if it would actually be handled by an arbitrator. But these third party complaints were not supposed to be there wasn't supposed to be publicized on who the company was that filed them. Well, apparently, there's a few states that aren't happy about this. And the New York Times posted a story today about the disclosure that Google was the company that essentially fingered Vista Search as being anti-competitive. So this is moving forward. And it basically boils down to is that they're saying that the Vista search broke the Google desktop search. Now, you know, I'm sorry. Guess what? Operating systems get updated. Things need to be changed. And Google, you know, quit crying in your spilt milk. Go out and fix your application so it works on Vista. Now, if you can't fix it so it doesn't work, then that's a whole different story altogether. But it's interesting, though, that this is kind of leaked out that Google was the actual company here. So we will see what happens. And they're saying there was no performance degradation and, you know, anything like that. But there's this is a pretty long article. And they're talking about how these complaints now, you know, Microsoft's kind of the end of the stick on this. And they keep getting jabbed in the eye. Anytime thinks that Microsoft has been anti-competitive with them, they can use this consent decree to go actually and keep jabbing away at them. Now, this consent decree is going to officially end in November of this year, But government oversight is going to continue for a couple more years because of the, I guess, quote-unquote protocol licensing problems that they had before. So we'll see what happens with this one. We'll see if Google and Microsoft kiss and make up, or if Google tries to get some money out of them or make them change Vista Search. From what I'm hearing, and I actually saw an article that was, I don't have it in the show notes tonight, but I think it was a spin or had actually done an article on it was Chris Perillo had requested for someone to talk about the differences in search. I think he actually put a blog post out today looking for some people to talk about this. So maybe we'll hear some more from him on that over on chrisperillo.com/live. Another little Microsoft, and in this, I have to hand it to Microsoft. Microsoft doesn't get very funny very often. And when they do stuff that they try to be funny, they actually look like they're kind of being kind of stupid. You know, it just seems like they haven't had a lot of luck in any of their viral marketing lately. But Microsoft this week opened an event with a Back to the Future spoof. And what they apparently have was able to do was get some inside information on what Steve Jobs was going to be talking about today at WWDC. And one of the Leopard features, it's a prominent new feature called Time Machine. But anyway, this spoof that they put out earlier in the week is sort of a dig back on this new Time Machine feature that Apple's being released. And I did notice during the some of the notes I was reading on different people that were live blogging the WWDC event today was that, you know, there was some nice early parting shots by, you know, Steve Jobs made some shots at Microsoft, and there was some, you know, just some subtle stuff that got the crowd riled up and the fanboys happy that, you know, he would take some cheap shots, I guess it would be. You know, and here's the thing. He needs to quit doing that. You know, there's a lot of dedicated Windows users out there that are looking at Apple, because Apple has gotten to the point now where you can run a Windows Vista on a Mac, either on Parallels or Boot Camp, or actually in a virtual machine as well. So he needs to, you know, kind of quit taking so many jabs at Microsoft, because guess what? Who are their new customers going to be? Their new customers are going to be people that are currently running PCs that think they want to try to have both experiences. And if these guys keep poking Windows users in the eye, well, Windows users are going to say, well, you guys are continuing to be the prima donnas that we thought you were. I'm sure that's going to raise some, I'm sure I'm going to get some voicemail on that. And we're not going to buy a Windows machine. I'll just go out and buy another PC. So, you know, that's, you know, Apple's going to have to, you know, start to try, you know, they're going to have to kind of take the high road. And maybe they won't. Maybe, you know, maybe that's just the way business is done, and that's, you know, that's the right way of doing things. But, you know, it doesn't endear Windows users who are going to be possibly switching to them if they're making those shots like that. Maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe you guys will send me some feedback and tell them I'm full of smoke here. But anyway, the Microsoft finally, you know, was able to get a little early pun in on the Apple folks on doing a Back to the Future spoof. And I have the link up in the show notes. Once you see it, and then you kind of relate, you go back and do some research on this Time Machine feature that actually is being introduced on Leopard, I think you'll get a smile out of it. At least I did. Okay, so you know, I'm a geek. What can I do? What can I say? All right, great article over on GigaOM, and you know, this blew me away. I love it when companies get new rounds of venture capital. And I always look at it and I say, okay, what's the company doing? Where are they at? How's their base of users? And I try to get a feel for, you know, what justified the company getting more money. But one that has got a whole bunch of people scratching their heads today is that Medium, M-E-D-I-U-M, a company that makes a browser add-on that relates the web pages you're browsing to those viewed by other people, concurrently using today, announced that they had raised an additional $15 million in a second round of financing. This brings its total capital to $20 million. $20 million? $15 million for a round B on this? Who's using it? I loaded it one time. I played with it. I was like, I'm not impressed. And I continued on. Obviously, they must have a good base of users. And I read a little further down here, and I'm like, I'm really scratching my head, because the co-founder said that they had 20,000 people registered. 20,000? 20,000, 20 million total? I don't get it. Congrats for them. But 15 million is a pretty big investment for a round B, and for a company that hasn't proved how many it's going to be using the tool. That's simply amazing. It really, really is. But anyway, congrats to them. I hope they spend it wisely, and I hope they do very, very well with it. Okay, kind of talked about this earlier in the show, and I wanted to bring it up now. I should have had this linked up earlier. But, you know, I've heard people talk about this in the past, and, you know, I even have a tendency to agree that when I'm reading, and here I've got on the desk right now, I'm looking at my PC, and I have my MacBook Pro on the left running, and when I have the browsers loaded up, and they're loaded on the same pages, I've always noticed that my fonts and especially the anti-aliasing effect within Windows is a lot clearer, and it just looks like the fonts are a lot clearer on web pages. And it kind of drives me batty, really, to surf the internet with my Mac. And I never was been able to really understand completely why. I didn't know why my visual experience wasn't as good on a Mac as it was on a PC. And today I think maybe there's a little bit of a hint of the explanation on why. What they've done is they've loaded the first beta of Safari for Windows, and then they did a side-by-side comparison. They took a screenshot of a Google page with Safari and a screenshot with Internet Explorer. And just in this article alone, you can look at the differences and you go, wow, it's really, really different. And then if you go and scroll down a little further and they zoom in on the actual text, I mean, it's night and day. So take a look at this. And then for those of you that have both machines, have a PC and you have a Mac, tell me, I'd love to hear back from you what you think, from a visual experience, where's your best visual experience? Is it on a PC or is it on a Mac? And just kind of do a comparison here on this article first, and then do your own assessment and look. And I always knew there was something that wasn't quite the same, and I think this is it. And actually, I saw a few other people had mentioned this in a different article at different times, and there was a whole bunch of stuff today on it, of course, because people really focused in on it. But it says here that OS X's anti-aliasing, especially it seems with the monospace fonts, just isn't as good as Windows. ClearType. Apple has some room to improve in this area. The fonts were blurry on the edges. I think they're really, really close. Don't get me wrong. And it wouldn't take too much for Apple to fix this. But it's definitely much, much clearer. Much, much, much clearer. Okay, what I'm going to do tonight, we're already 51 minutes in, and I did this on purpose, is we're going to give away our first summer giveaway prize. And what I have and what I am actually going to do is I'm going to give away a USS Arizona 65th anniversary flag. So in other words, it was flown on December 7th on the 65th anniversary of the attack of Pearl Harbor. So it's going to be a collector's item. There were only about 4,000 flags that were flown that day. So I'm going to give you a chance here to win one of these flags. And the only thing you really have to do is send in an email to geeknews@gmail.com or send in a call in the voicemail hotline. I'd probably prefer emails because it's just going to be easy for me to rack and stack them. Tell me two things, what you like about the show the best and what you hate about the show. So I'm going to give you a chance to rave, and I'm going to give you a chance to rag. So geeknews@gmail.com. And then on Friday, I'll announce the winner of that, and we'll get it shipped right out to them. And I'll actually have a little certificate made with your name on it. And we can get you an official 65th anniversary USS Arizona flag flown on December 7th. So I think it's a nice little first prize to give away. And, of course, I was going to wait and give it away on the 4th of July, but I figured, heck, let's give a couple of these away. And I got some other stuff, too, and as part of our summer giveaway. And you're being rewarded for hanging out towards the end of the show. And on future shows, I'm just going to do this in the middle of the show someplace. And that way you'll never know where the what it's going to take to win. So you can send them up right up until the next show recording time, which is Thursday evening about 8 o'clock. That's when I'll close it out. And then I'm going to essentially random pick one, and we'll get those out to you. Okay, the MPAA is accusing TorrentSpy of concealing evidence. Well, this is scary, scary, scary. If you're using TorrentSpy, my TorrentSpy.com, my advice to you is run. Don't use it after. See, what's the date that they're going to have here? I believe June 12th. Actually, this today. If you're using TorrentSpy, stop immediately until I tell you it's safe to use it. They've got an injunction. They're going to make TorrentSpy give all their logs up from the time that the injunction is put in place. And essentially, they're going to send the log files directly. Get this, directly to the MPAA. I've written about this on the website already, but I wanted to put the word out for those of you that aren't keeping up on the blog on a day-to-day basis. Be very, very careful out there, okay, in using these torrent sites, because this is what the MPAA is going to do now. They're going to go after all these sites that are doing torrent tracking, and they are definitely want to invoke some pain on some wallets, and those wallets could be yours if you're downloading copyrighted material that the MPAA doesn't want you downloading. So fair warning on that, folks, okay? All right, what else have I got for you here? I think I'm through. Wow, 55, because I've got some huge voicemail comments tonight. Let me go over my little list here. I think that's all I've got for articles. We're actually kind of short on news tonight. It was kind of a short news day. Seems like Thursday night show, which is released Friday mornings, have been doing better content-wise. Kind of odd. It's kind of flipped here over the last couple of weeks. But anyway, all right, make sure you check out mylifeonline.tv. That's the website that I'm going to be playing around here with for a while. I'm going to have the camcorder running 24/7. It'll be specifically in my office when I'm in the office, or I'll be pointing out the window, and you'll be able to see the beautiful Hawaii skyline and a little bit of water when I'm not in the office. So at night, it'll actually be probably pointing in the office, but you don't want to see it when it's dark anyway. It's quite boring. But for those of you that are on right now, I'm definitely going to see who else. Someone sent me a instant message on the IRC. Oh, it was Reb Tim. Hey, Todd, just checking in real quick. Got to go to bed here, and we'll have to listen and download tomorrow. Take care. And then yeah, and then the person, it was 3:13 a.m. here. Too bad about the time change. Oh, that's true. Well, what were you doing up at 3:13 in the morning? That's the question. All right, let me go ahead. I've got a great one here from, I want to play this one right off the bat. This is from Ryan Ozawa. And this is very, pay attention here. If you guys are want to get into this live streaming stuff, this is going to be the way to do it. Now, I'm hoping, let's see, I don't know. Yeah, I think. I don't know if the people on the stream are going to be able to hear this. I don't think I've got it piped in that way, but let me go ahead and fire this up in the actual, for those of you that are listening to the show on tape delay, I guess.
Aloha, Todd. This is Ryan, a fellow geek here in Honolulu. Right now, actually, listening to your Friday show, I'm stuck in traffic on the way home. And just wanted to thank you, first of all, for mentioning the coverage in the local paper about my life casting, the mobile video streaming. And I thought that I'd give you a call and let you and your listeners know just a little bit about how I'm doing it, because actually, pretty much everybody can do it. And I think that's what's really exciting about it. I'm doing it right now. There are four people watching me drive home. Don't know why it's interesting, but it might be for some people. In any case, the components are real simple. There's only four basic parts to it, of course. The laptop, the internet connection, the camera, and the streaming service. Now, when you were driving over the H3 freeway on your house hunting and I was watching you, around that time was when I was using my Mac, and I had the FireWire eyesight, and that was how I was doing it. But the problem with Macs, I love Macs, but one of the weird quirks of the laptops is that they will never run with the lid closed. And I wanted to put these laptops in my backpack, so that wasn't going to work. So what I did was I literally bought the cheapest laptop I could find, an open box special at CompUSA, an EverX, for about $400. So that got me the laptop. The camera is a Logitech QuickCam for Notebooks Pro, probably one of the smaller ones out there, USB connector. I didn't want to get into the spy cam kind of category, so that's what I used. And for the internet connection, both for the Mac and for the EverX, I was using the Sprint EVDO Rev-A USB modem, the Ovation U720. Pretty good bandwidth here in Honolulu. I hit a couple of blank spots on the far side of the island, but really pretty much anywhere in Honolulu it works great. And of course the streaming service, you mentioned Ustream, still my favorite, still my preferred service. Definitely the A-list bloggers seem to like it too, Chris Perillo, Robert Scoble, and all of that. But there are other alternatives like Stick'em and Blog TV and I don't know, dozens of others that you could also use. And because of these lovely Flash players, you can embed them on your own site. That's what I'm doing at hawaiigeek.tv. Now, the last thing that you mentioned, though, was the GPS integration, and I'm really proud of that. I haven't seen that done anywhere else, and I kind of be really secretive about it, but just for your show, just for your listeners, I'll tell you. First of all, there are lots of ways you could do it. Garmin has just unveiled some APIs, some ways to use their GPS devices with web services. There's also a company called GPS Gate, gpsgate.com. I think the company is actually France, and they're doing some stuff with Google integration and web services again for GPS. But I took the easy way. There's a web application. Actually, there's a Java application called MoloGogo, mologogo.com. It's a Java app for certain phones. And it's sort of like a social network that you can have friends, and it'll tell you when you're in the neighborhood of someone else. But I just use it for the positioning. Now, the way that works is you put this Java app on your phone, and then you can either have it on their website or on your website, which is what I'm doing, a Google map of my current position. The great thing about that is that it works on the Motorola I-415, which is a very cheap Motorola handset. In fact, the way that I got there was through Boost Mobile, which is one of those pay-as-you-go mobile phone service providers. It was a $30 phone, and it cost me 30 cents a day to make that data link to send the GPS data to MoloGogo. So for 30 bucks plus 30 cents a day, I have a Google map on my website that tells the world where I am, as interesting as that may or may not be. So you mash that all together, you got the IRC chat on the page, you got the Twitter status, you got all kinds of stuff. It's great. So, you know, it was good to get the coverage in the paper, but it won't be long before there are dozens of people, hundreds of people, running around doing this, covering news, being entertaining or annoying people, who knows. Definitely exciting stuff. And I definitely invite everybody to check out my site if they like, hawaiigeek.tv. Like you said, I love those .tv domain names. Get yours. And just, again, thanks for the mention, and I hope this was informative or at least interesting for some people. Have a great day, great long weekend for me, so take care. Aloha.
Ryan, thanks for sharing the secret, my friend, and I'm going to have to go back and listen to that real close to get the link there that you were talking about. I caught the bestmobile.com, but I guess it was HoloGogo or mobile. I don't know. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it because I didn't fully catch the actual because I know you said it twice, but it didn't come through real clear. But I'm going to go ahead and I'll get it figured out now. Now I'm on a mission. Thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that. Let's go ahead and get the next audio comment in here. And hey, keep up doing what you're doing, man. It's great stuff. It really is. What we need, Ryan, is them little itty-bitty laptops. We need to get someone to sponsor a couple of those for us with a real long battery life that essentially you know, I understand that yours was the cheapest laptop you could get, but I think some of those real mini ones, you know, we got to go small. Can't be carrying around a laptop every time for doing this, but definitely cool. How do you keep that thing cool inside a bag? That's the question. That's the thing I'd be worried about. All right, here's the next audio comment.
Hi, Todd. Hi, my name's Kevin. I live here in Klamath Falls, Oregon.
Hey, Kevin.
I just want to say, first off, let me say that I really enjoy your podcast. It's probably got the best overall original content of all the, you know, of all the podcasts I listen to. It's like right up there at the very top. Again, great job on it. Keep the good work up. I just want to comment on the latest podcast you had. You were talking about the Frag Book by Falcon Northwest. I live about 75 miles from where Falcon Northwest is located. And, you know, the sticker shock you were talking about, it's not a really surprise to me. A lot of their computers are really just out of the world for price. And it's kind of funny, too, because although I've been by their shop, where they have their headquarters at, I've never actually gotten a chance to go in and take a look around the showroom. It's kind of an upscale place, and you actually have to have an appointment to go in and look at their computers, which is
wow.
Kind of weird. But anyways, I thought I'd just like to pass that along. Also, one other thing I'd like to ask about, I want to say it was your podcast, maybe a couple weeks ago, there was a person that called in, and he was on the, they were talking about the Real Player, how, you know, Real Player, pretty soon it's going to, you know, you're going to be able to record like YouTube and Flash videos and that kind of, along those lines. And they had an alternative to that, and they said they've been using it for like a year or something like that. But anyways, I've tried to Google it, and I cannot remember what the name it is for the life of me. If you know what it is, if you could pass it along, I'd really appreciate it. Again, thanks again for the great podcast. Really great job. Excellent content. Thanks again. Bye.
Hey, thanks so much for the call, and I tell you what, I have all the links to the different Flash players that were talked about in the show is actually in the podcast show notes underneath the listener links. So go to geeknewscentral.com, click on the podcast link, scroll down, and look at the listener links, and you'll find those specific software applications within the listener links. I think that will get you real close. If that doesn't get you to the specific applications that they were talking about, you know, please give me a call back and I'll try to dig whatever else you're looking for out. But I think I have all those links up in the show notes. Okay, here comes our last voicemail comment for the night.
Hi, Todd. This is Tom from the Fog View podcast.
Hey, Tom.
That's at fogview.com. I just have two comments about a previous show where you had mentioned a couple of topics. First off was Apple and the iPhone. And you said, what was Apple thinking when they went with AT&T for their carrier for the iPhone? Well, I think they were thinking one word, and that's global. Apple thinking global meant that they had to have a GSM phone to be able to basically go worldwide. They can create a worldwide GSM phone that uses, you know, one transmitter receiver, and that is capable of working in the AT&T network in the United States, which they have a exclusivity with, and then also be able to go out to the rest of the world and provide a phone which GSM that's compatible with most of the world. So I think Apple was actually looking long term, and I think that's actually a good move. Now, I do have Sprint EVDO myself, and I enjoy that. But if they went with Sprint or with Verizon, which is CDMA, they're both CDMA, that would not be compatible with phones in the rest of the world. The second item was about Microsoft and why doesn't Microsoft come out with an operating system that provides anti-spyware, antivirus, bot, you know, support or protection against bots, and just protect the user. And I think the reason is the DOJ. If you think about it, a couple of years ago, Microsoft came under attack for embedding the Internet Explorer, the browser, into the OS, and they had to go to great lengths to basically make it so that it's removable or just they can disable that and be able to use third-party browsers. And they had the same type of thing when they came out with compression, and they added compression into the OS even years before that. So I think if Microsoft came out, like in Vista, with a OS that was locked down, that had already had antivirus, anti-spyware, and other protections against, you know, malicious code, I'm not sure Microsoft can actually do that. They're technically capable of doing that, but I mean, let's say they could or they tried to, you would get so many complaints, and I think there would be so many lawsuits against Microsoft that it would just not be feasible. One example of that is when they tried to lock down the OS on Vista before it was launched, and it turned out that McAfee and Symantec with the Norton Utilities, their antivirus, anti-spyware software would not work. So Microsoft had to go back and open up some APIs to allow them to get access. And of course, when you do that, I think you degrade the security features of the OS. So I don't think we'll ever see that come to pass, you know, having a one-stop solution for doing that, because you know, they'll just claim that Microsoft is trying to monopolize the whole OS space and not allow other companies to survive, which is unfortunate. Anyway, you have a great show. Keep up the good work. Keep up the good work, and talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, all great comments, and yeah, you're probably right on the Apple iPhone. I really hadn't thought about the international aspects of that. But at the same time, you know, it's just, I don't know, I guess Sprint and Verizon, you know, I thought they would have worldwide phones as well. But I know that T-Mobile does, but I guess I'm not real familiar with whether some of Sprint phones can travel globally or not. But I guess it's part of that GSM 3G stuff. Actually, I don't think there's going to be 3G in that iPhone. I think it's only going to be 2G, but time will tell. But yeah, great comments. Thanks, Tom. Definitely appreciate that. Okay, got an email from Russ. Russ says, hey, I got the DivX codec. Hey, thanks. Thanks for the tip on it. I was still able to get it at 6:45 a.m. Eastern. Well, Russ, I'm glad you got it, my friend. I didn't get too many emails back from people. I know you are one of them. So definitely the early bird got the worm there from the East Coast folks. Okay, got an email from John. Hey, Todd, whereas I can appreciate the simplicity of having a laptop with multiple screens, I don't even want to think about what that would cost. For those who are looking for multiple screens with systems that we already own, I recommend the Matrix Triple Head to Go. It's an external box to which you connect three flat panels. The software allows you to have a desktop three times the normal width, then the box splits a signal amongst three screens. I use it every weekend for my gaming sessions with family and friends. The ability to play games in a 38x40x1024 is staggering. Because the desktop is supported, you can have a Windows desktop up to 3820x1024. I love it, and although I'll confess I don't have the desktop set up that well, I just use it for gaming. But it could work just as well for those presentations. The only catch is it's a bit pricey. And he's got a review for it. I'll have a link up for it in my show notes. He says, on a separate note, my podcast is still on the front burner. I have to finish a major DVD project first. There aren't enough hours in the day. John, you and me both, my friend. Got an email from Aaron. He says, hey, Todd, I'm a longtime listener, but this is my first time writing in. First, I want to say thanks to the great podcast and consistently good content. I'm just writing to tell your listener, the one that talked about creating a web page with Publisher, that I agree with you, run away from Publisher. My advice is to first decide what type of website he wanted. If it is a personal website, I recommend just using a free blog engine like Dasblog. I created my site with it at thesprague.com. If he doesn't want a blog and can create great sites in a day with a content management system like .NET Nuke, this can be automatically installed from one of the hosting providers at GoDaddy. I created a site for my family's campground with it. I found it very easy, flexible, and it's open source. Finally, if none of these suits his needs, I would suggest downloading Microsoft free Visual Studio Express for web development. I wrote a blog about getting started with .NET development at my website, where I provided links to the needed downloads and things like development webcasts, podcasts, and virtual labs. If he would like more info, he can email me, and I'll include that back to him privately. So thanks, Aaron, for that. I appreciate it. Got an email from Hi. He says, "Hey, Todd, I know this may not affect you for quite some time. As I recall, you mentioned you only buy pre-owned vehicles." That's correct. I let someone else take that depreciation. He says, "Looks like automakers may start eliminating in-dash CD players and other electronic devices soon, according to this article in the Detroit News." So he says, here are the key points. Car makers are recognizing the need to add new sound technology and more electrical sources to the vehicle. He says a dash-mounted CD player could quickly go the way of the 8-track and quadraphonic sound, a vice president from Siemens VDO said Thursday at the Ward's Auto Interior Show in Detroit. Never-ending advances in digital music devices that take them everywhere, cell phones, and finicky customers who expect to customize their vehicles with portable devices will push CD players out of most vehicles by 2012. Automakers could save between $20 and $40 a vehicle if they limited CD players. Additionally, car makers recognize the need to have more electrical sources in a vehicle. He says, "Personally, I own an Acura TSX with a 6-disc in-dash CD changer, and since getting my first iPod less than 2 years ago, I haven't used it since. It also appears many people are even staying away from satellite radio. In fact, I happened to hear an automated podcast today mentioning that after the introductory service runs out in new cars, with either XM or Sirius satellite radio, the percentage of people begin paying for subscriptions is only 52%. So perhaps podcasting is having a far more reaching effect than anyone thought. As I always look forward to your show and keep up the great work in regards." And he puts a link in here to that as well. And I got to get back to you, hi, on your other comment as well. I'll do that here when I get a chance. Got an email from Doug. He says, "Hey, Todd, longtime listener, first-time emailer. I can tell you right now that Gizmodo will find no difference when talking about analog cables like components, coaxial, or even VGA. All those perks that you get in Monster cables could make a difference, especially with longer runs. But when it comes to DVI and HDMI, as long as the cheap cables aren't flawed, the picture will be the same. Robert Heron over at DLTV has done his own tests. I've tried both as well. Theoretically, the Monster perks might make a difference if you're getting some kind of funky interference, but generally, cables from most online retailers," he says, monoprice.com being pretty popular with my friends, "will give you the same picture. That's just my 2 cents," with Doug from Toronto. Thanks, Doug. Dorothy, I want to thank you for your email with the entertaining and educational links that you provided to me that's come up by from Cornell University. These are some Nest cams. I put these in the show notes tonight. I think those of you that are parents, that have kids that don't get to see too much wildlife, I think this is would be really, really cool for you to check out. Got an email from Bill, long email from Bill down in Indiana. Thanks for your email to Bill. Appreciate that. Got an email from John on Vista Killers. Let's see here. So I was thinking about your story ran on episode 273, Windows apps run on Leopard. For me, a real Windows killer and Vista killer would be if Apple would modify OS 10 to run on a PC. Amen, my friend. I want that too. He says, a Google search sort of reveals that it's kind of sort of possible with some hacks in VMware. For me, a real Windows killer, many of us have a significant investment in hardware that we don't want to trash in favor of an Apple box to run OS 10. Since Apple now uses the Intel platform, it would seem a wise and easy move. The only thing holding me back from a complete switch from Windows to Apple is my hardware investment. Apple should look on this idea as a marketing effort. If I was able to install and run OS 10 on my PC, then tomorrow I'd be more inclined to buy a real Mac when my hardware needs replacing, sort of a loss leader approach. Meanwhile, I'm moving to Linux. Your thoughts, John?" You know, John, you know, Apple's in the hardware business. You know, at $129 for the Leopard upgrade, you know, they're not in the software business. You go into any Apple store, and what do you see? 90% of the store is dedicated to hardware. The last 10% in the back, two little shelves, are usually what has software on it. I mean, you can't even get software hardly at a Apple store. I mean, they've got a few things, but if you want anything serious, you just got to go online and get it. So, you know, they are in the hardware business. They do not, they do not want, that's where their cash is at. So it's going to be a long time coming before we see OS X legally being allowed to be run on a PC. Got an email from Wayne. Said, hey, Todd, you may be interested in featuring this on the show. Looks like Sony is in trouble again. See link below. Apparently, oh, yeah, we've all heard about this, about a game that has a, this is a, I guess, an adult, not an adult game, but a game that's one of those shoot-up games, I guess, where they have a cathedral in the UK that is part of one of the scenes, and this has been making big news here. I have this up in the listener links as well. Got an email from Thomas. Hey, Tom, I haven't had time to check your experimental file out. I will definitely do that and get back to you as well on this. But thanks for your link on that great H.264 Turbo. Turbo.H.264. I've been playing with it here and definitely has some sweet encoding times. All right, folks, we're long, so I'm going to get off in here. As always, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Leave your voicemail at 619-342-7365. Y'all take care. We'll see you on Friday. And until then, aloha.